Welcome to Everything Ethical, your latest news and views from King & Shackson Asset Management. The information contained in this podcast is for general information purposes only and should not be considered a personal recommendation or specific investment advice. Hello everybody, my name's Harry Thompson and today is the 20th of January with plenty of information to digest in markets. 1 year after Donald Trump's inauguration and almost 3 weeks into 2026, global markets have had to digest a year of change and are now processing data from the retail-focused holiday period. In both cases, longer-term investors are watching for the full effects on the global economy after a turbulent year. In addition, the recent shift in global dynamics created by fresh events in Iran and a step up in the saber rattling over Greenland have raised tensions as oil and tariffs are back in focus. Starting with the year as a whole, we have seen a seismic adjustment in global trade dynamics following Liberation Day, and markets have been keen to see the effects of these changes. Supply chains and inflation have been the main concerns for both the real economy and markets. Almost a year on, things have not been as bad as feared, and back in the autumn, the market took comfort from corporate comments to that effect. Likewise, fears around global growth have not materialised. So as a result, 2025 was a good year for both global equity and bond markets. Not only that, in 2025, the rally has had a much broader base, which has benefited more diversified portfolios, including ethical and impact-focused investors such as ourselves. Moving on to now, consumer behaviour from Black Friday to the New Year sales is a key indicator, and on the whole, the data has been seen as encouraging. Corporate reporting also began last week with the banks, and is set to continue into February, with both the numbers and the comments being scrutinised. This leaves many professional investors in that typical late January moment, thinking to themselves, are markets being complacent, sounding the all clear a few months too soon? Or are they being overcautious as the evidence shows growth is a bit better and inflation is under control? Inflation is clearly less of a risk. The tariffs have been swallowed and not fully passed on, so interest rate expectations are for more cuts in 26 as the economy softens a little. Expectations do favour a soft landing at current. The fresh round of tariffs announced over the weekend could threaten this, and in the coming days, it will become clear if this is just a posturing or a new major risk. The subjugation of central banks to politics is not just a US phenomenon. It is a new global reality, and it has been priced in at the longer end of the bond market. Where there have been some more long-standing concerns over economic weakness, most notably in Europe, expectations are now focused on government spending. The defence bonanza, fueled by increased borrowing outside of the deficit limits, has given hope to markets, and already become a source of stimulus, which has hit the ground, with jobs now being created in the sector. The good news for the more ethical investors is that the long overdue upgrading of the grid infrastructure is a reality, creating jobs in the UK and Europe. On top of this, the Chinese Global Investment Programme through their Belt and Road Initiative has reached a new record, hitting over $213 billion in 2025, with energy, both renewable and fossil fuels, being a key component of this. All this, however, remains drowned out by the AI frenzy. And even the IMF recognises that this has become a big risk to the global economy. Over the last year, expectations have been raised, and now they need to be met or exceeded. There exists an abundance of opinions on the AI sector, which remains divided. In our view, it's too soon to call on whether the bubble is going to burst. What matters is remaining diversified, something we will seek to continue to do within our investment universe, and of course, the ethical focus of our portfolios. Europe and the US, therefore, continue to drive forward with hope for further growth, as public and private investment and lower interest rates look set to at least maintain the current growth levels, and maybe even provide room for improvement. Japan, too, continues to grow, whilst China, which we've already mentioned, and India remain key markets. Whilst the outlook remains more mixed, they are more stable than a year ago, and the lower oil price benefits these energy-hungry economies in the current geopolitics. China and its growing grip on the global electric car sector has become a current flashpoint. And as mobility is the next frontier on decarbonisation, This is the topic that demands the ethical investor's attention. The levels of global debt with both Western governments and in the private credit sector remain a background risk. Right now, it's ignored as interest rates remain set to fall and economic growth is holding up. Last year, there were two credit scandals, but both limited to the private credit sector, with more limited risk to major banks. This remains a risk on the horizon, and our focus going forward in portfolios, as it has been for the last few years, will remain on quality and liquidity in credit, and again on diversification in equities. As corporate results come in over the next few weeks, and more CEOs comment on their business in the real world, we're going to also have Davos politicians, business leaders, and central bankers speaking. Whilst the outlook is positive, vigilance remains key. And that's the end of the macro piece. And now we're moving on to a more thematic and a bit of a Marmite topic in nuclear energy. Obviously, nuclear energy has made headlines ever since it was rolled out, with the first plant being operational in the 50s in the Soviet Union, whilst the first full-scale commercial plant in the West came slightly later here in the UK. Obviously, a revolutionary technology, but there's been the obvious disasters over the years, such as Chernobyl and Fukushima. And we know from our bespoke ethical questionnaire, the sector is like Marmite for a number of clients. My colleague Will has been working on this and he's written a piece, so I'm going to bring him now and have a discussion around nuclear energy and how that fits into portfolios. Hi Will, welcome. So you've obviously written this piece on nuclear energy, so what is the revival all about?
Yeah, thanks Harry. So the revival was predominantly driven by a surge in demand for electricity over the coming decades, a result of build-out in infrastructure for artificial intelligence, particularly from data centres. In the US, for example, power consumption from data centres is on course to account for almost half of the growth in electricity demand by 2030. So nuclear can provide baseload power, which is the minimum amount of electricity needed to supply the grid at any given time, which renewable sources such as wind and solar cannot maintain in the absence of sufficient battery storage. These data centres need reliable and consistent 24/7 power. Nuclear is therefore the lowest carbon solution to meet this need. Energy security is another driver, particularly in Europe that became so reliant on cheap Russian gas, which was thrown into the spotlight following Russia's invasion of Ukraine.
Interesting. So obviously, given the past issues, cost overruns, etc., obviously we know that's well documented. Who is behind this driver for the energy?
Yeah, so there's two main drivers really behind this revival. The first being the so-called AI hyperscalers. These are the big technology companies such as Microsoft and Alphabet, who demand huge amounts of power to develop their AI. They need constant and reliable power, but also have very serious ambitions to be net zero. And so they don't want to rely on fossil fuels and the traditional energy grids. There's also an increasing competition for power supply between these players as well. So nuclear also enables them to achieve energy independence and be independent of external or potentially dirtier grids. In particular, this has given rise to small modular reactors. The second driver behind nuclear's resurgence has been national energy policies. Europe has ambitious nuclear energy plans that require vast amounts of investment. In a similar vein to technology companies, this is driven by a requirement for constant power that aligns with their clean energy strategies, as well as increasing energy independence and security, as we previously mentioned. In the UK, for example, new impetus has been given by the government, with significant funding commitments for Sizewell C and the inclusion of nuclear power generation in its green financing framework, which makes it eligible for things such as the UK Green Gilt.
Would that impact the existing gilts that are already out?
No, so the existing ones out in the market currently are based on the previous framework. So this would be for any new government bonds issued in the green gilt sphere going forward.
So there's no issue in portfolios where it's currently held, say bespoke portfolios where they have an issue with nuclear generation?
Yeah, so a bespoke portfolio that holds the UK green gilt currently, nuclear would not be eligible for that financing. Okay. So Japan is another example of how the industry has revived over the last year or so. So obviously, as we all know, Japan has a very complex and traumatic history with nuclear, which includes the Fukushima disaster that you mentioned at the start in 2011. And after that, all of the country's nuclear powers were shut down. So before that disaster, nuclear accounted for 30% of Japan's energy mix, and inevitably electricity costs have increased substantially since then. But with this ever-increasing demand for cheap and low-carbon power, the government are turning back to nuclear to form a coal part of its future energy strategy, with targets such as 20% of the energy mix in the near future. Arguably, the most ambitious of all has been Donald Trump, who through executive orders throughout 2025 aimed to reinvigorate the industry, including a target to quadruple capacity by 2050. A core theme across all government initiatives has been to reduce regulation, which has been a cause of historical cost and time overruns, as well as exploring new technologies.
You mentioned earlier, Will, about small modular reactors. So what are they? What are the benefits? And are they a viable solution for these power-hungry data centres that you mentioned?
So as the name suggests, small modular reactors, or SMRs as they're often known, are much smaller than traditional nuclear power plants, which means that the major component of them can be factory fabricated, transported, and then assembled on site. This reduces the construction time significantly and simplifies the installation. The modular aspect also means that they're easier to scale over time. So for example, a data center could just start with one module, and then over time, as the demand for that site increases, they can add more modules to the existing site. So for data centers, this is a good solution because it enables deployment in areas where large reactors are just simply impractical. A data center can build up their own fleet of SMRs over time, utilizing multiple deployments of the same reactor as their energy needs increase. So this speeds up the initial deployment. So for example, we've seen with Google when they signed a deal with Kairos Power for 500 megawatts of generation by 2035. But their first 50 megawatt reactor is expected to be supplying power to Google as early as 2030. So as mentioned earlier, this also gives companies such as Google the independence in the energy supply that they crave.
So it certainly sounds like an intriguing concept. We've mentioned all the risks with traditional or nuclear that people are more familiar with. Do those risks remain with these SMRs?
Yes, so SMRs are expected to be faster to build with enhanced safety and waste management features. And this has in part contributed to a lot of the hype that surrounds them. But it shouldn't be forgotten that for now, this is still very early stage, with designs under development and commercial success is not yet proven. In fact, it's not until maybe this year or next year that the first one's actually expected to be built. So until an operational SMR proves these benefits, caution, I think, should still be exercised, but it certainly is an exciting potential for AI and digital infrastructure. And you note the larger, more traditional style reactors, but it should also be noted that advancements have improved for safety features quite significantly. In fact, despite the perception, nuclear is actually the second safest energy source, which is measured by fatalities per amount of energy produced, which includes all of the major accidents that you mentioned at the start. Nuclear waste, which is obviously a major concern for many, which has its significant disposal challenges, risk of contamination and proliferation by bad actors and unstable regimes, should not be underplayed. Another risk is, of course, the mining of uranium, which threatens environmental damage and health for workers and communities. And this would still be needed for the small modular reactors, of course. So supply also depends on a few countries here as well. So we mentioned earlier about the energy security angle, but this isn't fully sort of solved by this because there is still geopolitical risk with those that supply uranium. But in this area, SMRs are exciting because they produce less waste, whilst companies such as Oklo are pioneering the recycling of nuclear fuel, which is effectively converting used fuel into new energy, as traditional forms of nuclear generation doesn't utilise the full power potential of that fuel. So this reduces both the risk around waste, but also the demand on mining uranium.
Just a quick question with regards, because we're UK investors and Rolls-Royce tends to come up a lot. There's a bit of an issue, though, with nuclear and Rolls-Royce, because obviously there's a lot of other things that go on in that business revenue for that company.
Yeah, so for Rolls-Royce, sort of nuclear is only about 1% of their revenue at the moment. Their sort of main area is defence and aerospace, as you say. And this kind of forms their new market segment, as they classify it. But it's not just Rolls-Royce that sort of is a part of their business. So classic examples, Iberdrola, for example, they're a big electricity provider around the world, a big developer in renewables. They do have a bit of gas still as well. And nuclear forms about 3-4% of their revenue at the moment. So often when we get exposure to some of these companies where applicable, is actually only a small part of that company. It's only really these SMR companies such as Oklo that I mentioned earlier, where their sole business line is nuclear.
Yeah. So obviously to confirm on the bespoke side, down to the client, whether they want that in their portfolios. On the MPS side, there is a screen of a limit for the ethical MPS and then no limit for the Brighter World MPS. But even then, the actual allocations are incredibly small. And we've documented that in the piece that you've just put out as well.
Yeah, exactly. In the piece and on the bespoke side, for example, IMPP has been in the portfolios for many years. They recently took a stake in Sizewell C, which obviously is not yet constructed and generating. But at some point over time, that will provide nuclear exposure to those portfolios. And similarly, Brookfield Renewable, they bought a company called Westinghouse a couple of years ago, which have a small exposure to nuclear power generation as well. But that's sort of the only exposure at the moment in bespoke portfolios where ethics allow.
Perfect. Cheers. Thanks very much for that, Will. And obviously, that document's available online. If anyone hasn't seen it, they can get in contact and have a read of that. And if any questions pop up, Will's your expert on nuclear energy now.
Great. Thanks, Harry.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. The information contained in this podcast is for general information purposes only and should not be considered a personal recommendation or specific investment advice.